2012 is turning into a big year for the man who painted The Lady in Gold, Gustav Klimt. This summer marks the 150th anniversary of the Austrian painter's birth. Many of his greatest paintings, though, are no longer on display in Vienna, at least. A lasting legacy of the Second World War and the fact that much of his work was stolen by the Nazis. Several paintings have been returned to the rightful heirs. And in fact, Austria has returned about 10,000 or so pieces of art because of restitution since the World War II era. Perhaps the most famous of the Klimt paintings, though, is The Lady in Gold. It's a dazzling portrait, almost blinding in its gilt brilliance, sumptuous in silver and gold, almost erotic in its adornment of the female form. And when it sold at auction in 2006, at the time, it was the most expensive painting of all time.
Adele Bloch-Bauer is enthroned and she's surrounded by a sea of ornament. Her initials are really strewn throughout the cloak. You have an Egyptian eye, and then, of course, you have other symbolic things that could allude to female sexuality, and they are built up in relief. Klimt used relief to give another dimension to the work, and you really see it on her bracelets, on her choker, and then, of course, throughout the cloak. And that makes it a very exciting, almost a sculptural painting.
That voice there is Renee Price, director and curator of the Neue Gallery in New York, where the painting, The Lady in Gold, is now on display. The Lady in Gold is also the subject and title of author Anne-Marie O'Connor's new book, and she joins us today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I keep saying The Lady in Gold, and I feel odd saying that, because that is not the original title of this painting. That was the title given to the painting after it was stolen by the Nazis, right?
That's correct. Yes, the original title of the painting was A Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. There was no second portrait, so it was not Bloch-Bauer 1. It was just The Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer. When these paintings were stolen after Hitler marched into Vienna, the paintings of these Jewish women, most of Klimt's celebrated models were Jewish, were exhibited anyway with anonymous names. And the Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer was first unveiled as Dame in Gold, the Lady in Gold, because they couldn't say who the identities of these iconic women were.
And it seems odd. You know, ironically, this painting and the paintings of Klimt almost represented everything the Nazi Party was against. Not only did he feature Jewish models, but they were sumptuous. They had sexual overtones. They were almost gorgeous in their elaborate adornment to them. I mean, it seems odd that these are things that the Nazis would display and treasure.
Well, Klimt was the only modernist artist of his milieu who was not declared a degenerate in Germany. Kokoschka and other important Austrian artists were declared degenerates, and their paintings were pulled down off the walls of German museums. Klimt was not the favorite artist of Hitler when he was collecting for his Führer Museum in Linz. He wasn't even coveted by the Nazis when they first came to Vienna. But Klimt was beloved by Balder von Schirach, the Nazi governor of Vienna, and previously the head of Hitler Youth. Klimt could be recast to be compatible with Germanic values of the Übermensch, a masculine, virile German man. And he was an amazing representational artist. He could draw things just as they were. He was an astounding draftsman. And his paintings had become symbols of the empire and symbols of all the glamour and sophistication of Vienna. And this is something that they used them for.
We're speaking with Anne-Marie O'Connor, whose new book is called The Lady in Gold, about this very famous portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer, which was stolen by the Nazis and later returned to Adele's rightful heirs. You know, your story has three parts to it. The first part is what I want to talk about right now, which is where you're talking about the creation of the painting itself, Adele Bloch-Bauer's life, Gustav Klimt's life, and to a certain extent, the culture that helped shape Klimt, the very culture in Vienna that contributed to the creation of this work, is the same one that also helped create to the anti-Jew sentiment that ended up in this painting being stolen.
Well, anti-Semitism had always been an undercurrent of Viennese society. Vienna is considered the home of modern demagogic anti-Semitism. This was a time in Vienna in which the Jewish emancipation in the mid-1800s had brought some of the most brilliant minds to the city. And so the families of Freud and Mahler and the patrons of Klimt had come into the city. So suddenly the Jewish intelligentsia was really where it was happening in Vienna, so much so that when Mark Twain lived in Vienna in 1897 to 1899, he embedded himself in this circle, so much so that the anti-Semitic press began to call him the Jew Mark Twain. So there were always these two factors where it was this very progressive intelligentsia that was not shocked by Klimt's erotic drawings, but saw a portrait of him as risque, but somehow very prestigious and glamorous, like a Warhol portrait in New York. So this intelligentsia was the setting for this amazing flowering of culture in Vienna, but at the same time, they were resented by this undercurrent of anti-Semitism.
And these people, many of the Jews in Vienna fled, and their homes were ransacked by the Nazis when they came in. And of course, the idea that the Viennese, that the Austrians collaborated with the Nazis was resisted for a very long time.
Yes. After the war, what happened in Vienna stayed in Vienna. People didn't examine Austria's embrace of Hitler, who was actually Austrian. People tried to forget the past, paper over their past. People reinvented identities that, no, they weren't Nazi Party members. They were in the resistance during the war. So, yes, this great collective denial went on in Vienna that was exacerbated by the fact that Austria really didn't have the same kind of denazification that Germany had. They passed two amnesties right after the war that effectively ended denazification. And that ended that kind of reflection that went on in Germany after the war.
And that's part of what made it so difficult to get these paintings back to their rightful heirs, because they tried to erase the paper trail that established a connection between these artworks and the Nazis. Is that correct?
Yes. This process wasn't just a restitution of art. It was a restitution of history. It was very difficult for the Viennese to have these portraits that had all been stolen during the war, and also landscapes and other great collections, hanging on museum walls. At the same time, these women were martyrs. They had been persecuted. One had been deported to a concentration camp. It was very difficult for them to come to terms with this contradiction. Here were these women who were the quintessential sophisticated Viennese women of the turn of the century, yet at the same time, they were victims of the Nazi takeover.
So this book, which your book, and we're speaking with Anne-Marie O'Connor, whose new book is called The Lady in Gold, the book is really the story of the painting, and it's an epic history of this painting. But really, the heroine in the end is Adele Bloch-Bauer's niece, who, along with Schoenberg's, is it grandson?
His grandson.
Who is her, acts as her attorney, stay with the fight and end up leading a path, marking a trail for those behind them to also achieve restitution of the work that belongs to their family.
That's right. Restitutions of paintings were very belated, not just in Austria, but throughout Europe. It began in the late 1990s and continued into the last 10 or 12 years. So a lot of this examination of what had happened to this, not just the property, but also the culture and this milieu and this intelligentsia, did not begin until the restitution process happened. Then people started to look at these personalities. Well, most of Klimt's celebrated portrait models were Jewish women. Why was this? What was it about their role in turn of the century Vienna that made this happen? Most of the great collectors and patrons were Jewish because they were progressive enough to support his art and to support Freud and to support the new music and new ideas. So it was a reexamination also of Vienna's history.
And now you can actually see that very painting in New York. It's no longer in Vienna because of Adele Bloch-Bauer's niece who fought to get it back. Anne-Marie O'Connor, thank you so much for joining us. Your new book is called The Lady in Gold.
Thank you.
Well, you can find more on this story at thetakeaway.org. Well, there's money on the art market. We've been talking about money in the political market as well. And we've been asking you, if you give to either party, if you give to Mitt Romney or Barack Obama, Ron Paul or anybody else, and where you think your money's going. One listener says, while politicians might call themselves saviors, he's not putting any money in those collection baskets.
if they donated the money to the problems instead of the supposed solutions, wouldn't we be able to solve the problems with this money instead of just throwing it away on commercials?
Well, if it's true that these campaigns are going to raise $1 billion, that might put in some of the problems. Of course, it pales in comparison to that deficit. If you think that campaign money will do anything for the debt,
$1 billion could create a lot of jobs. That could build a lot of roads.
Create some jobs. Debt is $15 trillion. I'll just leave you with that number.
Forget the debt. Let's just talk about creating jobs.
About the roads. Good enough. Well, that's good advice. We do want to get your take. As always, 8778-MY-TAKE. Post to thetakeaway.org on campaigns or anything else you hear on the program. I'm Todd Zwillick.
And I'm Celeste Headley. This is The Takeaway.